beautiful thing about sports is the storytelling is unscripted. I didn't feel like the media was really being serious. And I just felt like, especially with the Knicks, there was just a white space. And so that's why I set forth and I said, listen, I'm going to start this thing.
Welcome to Catch the Moment podcast. I am your host, David Tyree.
It is caught by Tyree. That's a great catch by David Tyree. Oh my God. This ball's thrown and Tyree just goes up for it like a basketball player.
Grace and peace, beautiful people. This is David Tyree. Welcome back to Catch the Moment podcast. We're super thrilled today. I have the family in the building. Why? Knicks family. CP, the franchise owner and creator of Knicks Fan TV. It is about to go down because I've been a Knicks fan burning my whole life. And he's created the platform. We can all come together. But today we're catching a moment with the man himself. CP, what's good?
David, man, I'm happy to be on this podcast. You're one of my guys from that 07 team.
Yeah.
You've been on my show, Knicks Fan TV, which was a dream come true for me. So anytime I can return the favor, man, that's a blessing.
Man, that was too easy, man. So much to get into. And obviously, like I said, you're a native New Yorker. I know you're still in the Long Island area. But so much to dig into here, but I got to get your moment. I got to get your helmet catch story.
Yeah.
Where were you? I don't even know how old you are. You know, you're still looking seasoned, but you finally got a grade coming through.
Coming
my dog
out,
looking young. I see you, bro. So where were you when you saw the helmet catch? What was going on? Yeah. Any memories, bro?
Man, I was at one of the homies' cribs. He was having a Super Bowl party, and just all of us were kind of huddled up in the room, but as the game was going on, we were like, yo, we in this game, right? And I was at the Week 17 game at
so
Meadowlands.
The Patriots.
I was there when you guys almost beat them.
Yeah.
And I left that game feeling like, yo, we on par with these guys. Yeah. Like, if we make it there, we got a gauntlet to get through in the playoffs. But if we make it there, I think we can get it done.
100%.
So we're watching the game, and it's going, and we're keeping it close. And then, you know, when the catch went off, I just jumped in somebody's arms. I forgot who it was. I'm jumping. I'm going crazy. I'm bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Steve Smith had a couple of clutch catches on that
drive.
No
doubt.
And then the final play to Plaxico, man. I mean, it was just a phenomenal, phenomenal run.
So what was it looking like? I always like to ask, what was it looking like in your neighborhood and the area? Yeah. Like, I know you're not necessarily in Manhattan, anything like that. Was it just mayhem. The streets? So you can hear it around the neighborhood?
Absolutely. Beautiful. You know, growing up as a diehard New York sports fan, whenever my teams won, I always had a routine. Number one, you got to go get the papers. Take out the back page, put it in your time capsule. So I got all of that.
You got all
next,
that.
You
got
to go to Modell's and get your championship t-shirt.
Woo!
Went to Modell's, got that.
Yeah.
Then you got to plan with the homies because at that time, we're in high school, so we got to plan out to get to the parade.
Yeah.
So we got to skip school, forget school. That'll come later. We got to figure out what train we getting on and get to the Canyon of Heroes. And that's what we did, man.
Bro, people don't understand how special it is. And that's why it's worth it, even as a Knicks fan. So we, you know, I gotta definitely kind of hear, you know, you talk about as a New York sports fan, but you know, you have you've created a tremendous imprint in this sports media space, carving a lane for yourself and creating a community for the New York Knicks fans. And like, trust me, if you're a Knicks fan to this day, that means you a real one. And like I said, I wish I could be more vocal about my fandom, but it's deep. So tell me, like, a little bit of the journey. Of course, you're a Knicks fan and you're leading the charge, bro. So tell me a little bit about what it was like for you in your childhood when you got on, when it was officially burning in your heart, like, nah, I'm riding with the Knicks.
Yeah.
And how this kind of began to develop.
Yeah, as a kid, it's just watching those classic Knicks rivalry games on the NBA on NBC.
Yeah.
Right, so maybe you wake up on a Sunday, you go to church. It was a routine, right?
Yeah.
Your routine. You go to church, you come home, you eat lunch, and then 1 o'clock, the game is starting. Bob Costas is setting the stage, right? Maybe it's Jordan coming into town.
Yeah.
It's Reggie Miller coming into town. Like, those classic rivalries, once Riley left, when the Heat would come into town. Like, that was must see TV. You had to be in front of the TV.
Yeah.
And so that was just me from an early, early stage, and my family would get into it. My aunt was a diehard Knicks fan.
That's dope.
And because we are Jamaican heritage, you know, Patrick Ewing.
Okay.
That was our guy.
Jamaica.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that was our guy, and we were just riding with them through and through.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about sports is the storytelling is unscripted. It's beautiful. Unscripted. It's brand new, just like the moment, right? Just like the cats.
It's
so unscripted.
True.
So that's what got me into it so heavy with the Knicks, the Giants, the Yankees, and just going, you know, die hard for those teams. But on the back end of it, the sports radio.
Okay.
Especially WFAN. You had Mike and the Bad Dog. You had 660 AM and FM, 101.9 FM. And that's where you would go for football, be the Monday after. Like, oh, man, it's a tough loss or it's a big win. But you had to hear what your host,
what they had to say.
They broke it down. And the callers and the community behind it. And so I was captivated by that ever since I was a kid. And to bring it to more so the present day, I've been doing this 6 years now. And I just felt like, especially with the Knicks, there was just a white space that was just not tapped into. And I knew that they were diehard fans like myself that, yeah, they're losing, and they're losing year after year after year, but I still want to know, I still want to hope and dream that maybe next year is our year.
Yeah, yeah.
What are the moves we're making this year? Okay, maybe this is a stepping stone to greatness. So I was always tapped in, but I didn't feel like the media was really being serious in terms of how they covered it. And so that's why I set forth, and I said, listen, I'm going to start this thing.
Bro, that was special, and I probably, like, really, you know, I've been active on LinkedIn, and I would see pop up at least 3 years ago, and I'm like, franchise. I'm like, what's that about? And, of course, when I find out the Knicks is behind, I'm like, oh, my man is on to something. And I probably saw your profile a little bit before the pandemic. But, you know, it was a moment where, of course, now we got these amazing captive audiences. So anybody who was doing something was really had a tremendous leg up on the competition as creators. So, but, you know, when I think about, I gotta know what was, like, you know, you're talking about being young in these glory days, the Pat Riley days. I can even remember, I think it was Stu, before they hired Riley, who was the coach? It was the black dude. Was it Stu something?
Stu Jackson.
There we go. And so I'm Kenny Walker. I can remember Trent Tucker. I can remember, you know, and then, of course, it got real. You know, Patrick was always there. I can remember I had the Bombers poster with Johnny Newman, Mark Jackson. Yeah. So that was – what was your moment from, like, or who was your player? You know, you already mentioned Pat, but, you know, everybody know Pat was the man, right?
Yeah.
But was there any other moment or in your childhood that was like, this is my guy? You know, I'm a big – everybody – Anthony Mason. So what was that moment for you? For me, it was like Trent Tucker couldn't miss on the three. So it was little figures that really gave us such a storytelling, you know, of course, with the heart of New York City. So what were some of those early moments for you or players?
Mason was definitely my guy.
He was
definitely my guy. I'd never seen anybody as versatile and talented as Anthony Mason. And then on top of that, he had the flair, right? He always had everything etched in his haircut.
Yeah, something etched in the
God's
baldy.
Will or something like that in the haircut. So he had that New York style to him.
It's crazy.
But really, it was Starks.
No doubt.
To me, it was John Starks, the dunk. And when I talk about the storylines, the unwritten, the unscripted storylines of sports, Starks to Jordan was like that David and Goliath story,
man.
Right? Starks coming out the mud, leaving from Oklahoma, out of the grocery store, being locked up as a kid, CBA, having not making it, and then you had Jordan who was at the pinnacle, but
man.
Starks never backed down. And that was like, he, even though he was from the West, he was from Midwest in Oklahoma, he had that New York energy.
He did, bro.
Yeah.
It was special, and I didn't learn more about his story until later, and I met John a few times, and I'm just like, bro, like, it's only a few people that bring me in the real fanboy moment, and John is definitely one of those dudes, man, and he's got such a humble spirit. So kind of on to some of your journey, being a native New Yorker, and what was life like in relation to, you know, we always talk about the spirit of a New Yorker, the you know, I hate to overuse the grind mentality, but it really is a unique space where you have to have a certain disposition to find success.
Yeah.
It's not just going to come to you because there's so much competition. So what did you feel like was in your makeup, your family makeup, or in your personal drive that, you know, kind of, you know, you saw, well, you saw the opportunity, but you also had some of the work ethic. What was the early potion in your mindset that, that helped create yeah. this avenue?
Well, the grind certainly started from my parents. Watching them as a kid, right? Both of them working multiple jobs. With my dad, it was working on his investments in the real estate and, you know, family-owned houses and making sure the tenants were good or doing maintenance on the house. But then he'd have a 9-to-5, right? Then he'd go to corporate America, and then he'd come home, he'd be working on the house. So that work ethic definitely came from my parents and my family.
Now, were you, even as a young kid, sometimes, especially in our era, we didn't really know the full, you know, like entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah.
And, like, did you appreciate it, or were you one of these kids that is like, you know, like, I want to get away? Like, you know, I felt like it was two different kinds of kids in my era, where it was like, some people saw and appreciated the grind their parents were putting in, and some people was like, nah, I'm going to pave my own pathway. Yeah. So, like, obviously, you see it now, but, you know, what was it like in the moment?
It's funny, because I certainly appreciated it, because one thing about my parents is, like, when it came to material things, you know, you don't go to your dad for that. You go to your mom for that.
Yeah.
But when it came to, you know, life, investments, things that you needed in life, like, there was no, was never an answer for them.
Wow.
And so they always believed in me. They always invested in me and invested in my success. And then at the same time, I always had a drive to just work and get out on my own and try to do my thing. That back when we were teenagers, when you first set out to work around like 13, there was something called your working papers.
So that was
like a rite of passage for you and the homies, right? You're in middle school.
I can,
like,
go get this minimum wage.
Get this part-time job, you know? So I'm at the Gap. I'm delivering flowers as I'm older, and I'm doing all these, you know, menial jobs. But that's all part of what made me me, you know?
Yeah.
And just being in New York, it just felt right.
Now, so at what point, like, you know, was it college? Was college in the, was, you know, like, was that a demand or a command? Because that was the song for most of our parents, where you got to go to college. It's a different time now. Yeah. And so was that on the road? And at what point were you like, media is the space that I want to be? Because, you know, obviously there's many pivots in life. And how did you, you know, what was the plan from the start to, as opposed to how you end up carving this amazing lane as a contributor in the media space?
You know, college was definitely, it wasn't an option. Like, we were going to school.
You was
going to
do this.
We were going to school. So there wasn't that alternative path.
What'd you study there?
So I went to Hampton University, historically black college down in Virginia, and I studied business management. And my sister had went there prior to, so she's kind of been my role model when it came to pursuing that corporate path. And so I was kind of always following in her footsteps. She had went there prior to I got exposed to the school and the community aspect. That early community aspect of a small black school, only about 6,000 kids.
Yeah, most people don't know that about Hampton because it's so lauded historically, but it's actually pretty small.
And so that's where I went for undergrad. I after that, I kind of worked like some sales, marketing roles. Wasn't really there, you know, and then when the financial crisis hit, I was at News Corporation. I was a Rupert Murdoch minion. I was there, 1211 Avenue of the Americas, Monday through Friday, suits. If you didn't have your suit, you get reprimanded. If you leave to go take a break, to go get lunch without your jacket, they on you, like, super, super conservative environment.
Yeah.
And when the financial crisis hit, I left there and decided to go back to school. I said, you know, this is sales marketing. Not necessarily my lane, so went back to school. Ultimately, grad school, I went down to Atlanta.
This is
Georgia State University. I went down there at in 2011.
Yeah,
and went for my master's and ended up with a role in IT advisory, IT risk and advisory. So mainly in the cybersecurity space.
Yeah.
So ended up moving
some dope
back
tools
in
to have in the toolkit, brother.
It was a great tool. It was a great tool. So for, I believe, like 8 years or close to 10, I was in that cybersecurity role, working at different corporations in New York, man. And again, another pivot. And while I was doing that, that's when I was I found myself watching YouTube more.
Yeah.
And I found myself watching fan channels from Premier League soccer. I don't even follow that sport.
So you started seeing fan channels for soccer.
Saw it, and I saw the following. I saw the cult following that they would garner.
Yeah,
the community building, and I just said, you know, these guys are over in London.
Yeah,
this is New York.
Yeah,
like, we started this. Like I said, WFAN. We started this.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm like, but there's no, we don't have that on YouTube, that on-demand 24/7 content, live streaming. Like, it just wasn't in abundance.
Yeah.
But when I saw that, I said, I'm going to give this a try.
This is beautiful, man. Give it a try. And at what point, like, so in light of, you know, obviously this is the everybody has been almost forced to be a creator. If you're an entrepreneur, you have to be a creator, right? You have to create a space of content to tell your story. And having so much experience 6 years now, and I can't wait for you to show. I mean, like, I've seen so many crazy people pop up in the comments on some of your channels. Everybody from Fat Joe. I mean, like, I definitely want to hear even more on what some of your, you know, what some of your highlights were as far as engagement. Yeah. But what would you say is the best medium to, like, execute? Because creating community is what everybody's trying to do, right? And obviously there has to be a pinnacle. You got the Knicks as the pinnacle place as a sports fan. What's a key ingredient or recipe when you're in your approach as a creator to creating community?
In terms of which platform is the most ideal?
Yeah. Let's start there just to keep it.
I think it depends. It really depends
on
your lane, your niche, and your demographic.
Sure.
Right? You want to be where they are. If you're thinking about Gen Z, then it's more the TikToks. It's Instagram. It's a little bit of YouTube. That's
sure.
Why you have like YouTube shorts and things of that nature.
The shorts.
But if you're looking for the older generation, those people are primarily YouTube.
Gotcha.
They may be there on Facebook.
Yeah, so your millennials are getting older, right?
Yeah, so it all depends. But I would just say, you know, one thing that I did, I started on YouTube because I felt like you would be more discoverable on YouTube. I mean, it has 2 billion users per day.
Yeah.
So you could be more discoverable on YouTube, and that's kind of where I wanted to start.
Sure.
But the thing is that you have to be willing to experiment.
Mm.
You got to spread your wings on different platforms and try out different content.
Sure.
Because you just never know what the algorithm is going to tap into. And then ultimately, because that's what we talk about here, right? We got to feed the machines.
You got to feed the machines.
And then they in turn,
you got to give them,
you know,
what they want
feed
too.
That dopamine to the people who they see fit. It's the matrix, man.
It's so
it's
true.
The matrix. So I would just say it all depends on your demographic, your area of expertise, and also just going out there in trial and error.
That's excellent. No, it's great that you would say that, because it's like, you know, people find so many frustrations. And of course, you know, like, I'm one of these dudes. I got so little bandwidth in life. And, you know, like, man, I only got these five smooth stones to spin. I'm like, you need to spin them right. And most people quit because they don't probably have the best strategic insight. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you're dealing with pure passion and you find your way to figure this thing out, you know, for you, what has been the biggest, you know, you talk about trial and error. What was the biggest pain point? What was the biggest moment, you know, and if maybe you did, maybe you had a throw in the towel moment because of something in life. What was the biggest blind spot, you know, where you felt like, man, I just got hit with Holyfield haymaker, Tyson uppercut as you were building this out. And, you know, maybe that hopeless moment. So what were some of those dark moments where, you know, you pressing toward an end?
For sure. I would say certainly, you know, because I'm trying to manage a 9-to-5. I'm trying to build this thing up as a side hustle, almost another 8 hours in that. And then also trying to raise a family at the same time. So there's so much pressure. You have competing forces all over the place.
Really, now you're talking the real stuff. So
yeah, absolutely.
Wife, children.
Yeah.
How many?
Yeah. One.
One. That's I tell people. I have seven. So people tell me, I was like, one is hard, two is hard, three is hard.
It's hard, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me, like, when you saw the competing interests. I like the way you framed it. And what was the hardest transition point? Was it having a children in the midst of having this? You know, like, at what point were you like, man, I don't know if I'm cut for all of this.
Yeah.
So what was that moment? And, you know, how did you navigate your way through it, and who was maybe even central in helping you find solutions?
Yeah, I would say that the toughest part is those long nights. Those long nights, because you're starting from 7 a.m., right? You got to get the little man ready, get him fed, and get him changed up. Then you're going through the 9-to-5.
Yep.
You got to take the train. You got to commute to and from. That's another 3 hours. You're getting home 7 o'clock. Okay, now he's got to go to bed. Now you got to get ready for the game, right? So now you got to do your prep work, prep for pregame. And then I do my show. I'm not only just speaking in the microphone, I'm producing the show.
Yeah.
So I'm making sure, you know, people on the phone lines are good, making sure the chat is, making sure the stream is up and running.
Man.
So you're monitoring as well. You're producing and you're hosting as well.
Man.
And then after that, it's the post-production. So I got to make sure the podcast is up. I got to make sure I have my Instagram clips, you know, lined up. And so this is before we scaled up and added on help.
Of course, of course.
Everything, it was just me, one-man show. So before I know it, it's 2 a.m., and then I got to start it all over again. Man. So it really creates a high-stress, high-pressure situation.
Sure.
Especially in the beginning when you're not making as much, yeah, and you don't have that. The many viewers, and at the same time, the team is terrible.
Oh, man. Right?
I mean,
bro, it's not like they flock in these last 2 years. It's been more to talk about, especially even though, you know, like I said, it's not the success that we were ultimately looking for, but the trajectory since Leon Rose has become is like, okay, we have a base. You're starting to see quickly, you know, there's a base of talent that we're like, how are we not more successful yet? But there's excitement. Julius Randle, obviously, you know, having an all-star player.
Yeah.
So, I definitely see it. And thanks, Cher, because people need to have the right, you know, frame of mind in relation to, you know, pursuing a passion. But also, I tell people it's not spiritual unless it's practical, right? So if you have a God-sized vision for something, then there has to be a practical moment that you're building your life upon that seeds the, you know, that seeds the success. And, you know, but it's practical steps, and there's amazing tension that's kind of being, you know, that burn rate, right? That burn rate to bring something beautiful to pass, man. So, what was like, so let's get to some of those highlights, man, for you. Like, because for me, as a fan of the Knicks and as a fan of the product that you're creating in the community, what was some of your, I can't believe I'm doing this more. I can't believe this is happening, whether it was an engagement with a celebrity fan or just a big pinnacle cross to a barrier for Knicks Fan TV.
For sure. I think the first one, and it was ironic because I distinctly remember a conversation I was having with one of my old co-hosts. We were walking into Madison Square Garden, and we were debating the path in terms of content.
Sure.
Should we do YouTube? Should we stay on YouTube? Should we go podcast? Should we go back to Instagram? And I remember I said it to him. It's verbatim. I said, we got to stick to YouTube. We got to level up every day. Be better every day. Try to get 10% better every day. You just never know who's watching.
Yeah.
Just keep it consistent. And stay with it. Keep it consistent. And then probably like maybe 2 weeks later on Twitter, I get an at from Chuck D. And it was just a strong endorsement for Knicks Fan TV. Like, yo, I just tapped into Knicks Fan TV. Check them out. Hit that thumbs up button for you, boy. I was just like blown away.
Yeah.
I was blown away, man. But that's why I went back to my guy. I was like, bro, I told you.
How righteous is that?
Yeah.
You know, it couldn't come from a better endorsement. You think about the first kind of like quote unquote celebrity endorsement. Yeah. Fight the power, fighting for Knicks Fan TV.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And his support, I say this all the time, and I have no shame saying it. His support has been unwavering since day one.
Yeah.
You know, when we set up our show, he's in the chat before I'm in it with the community. And they rally behind him. He just called into the show last night. He closed the show. Just everything, man. You know, my appearances on ESPN.
Of course.
Chuck D throwing the alley-oop. Like, yo, give this kid a chance. Check him out.
Bro.
We made a documentary about Knicks Fan TV called Fantastic Voyage. I mean, just so many examples.
Yeah.
Just demonstrating his belief in me. It's just a blessing, man.
Bro,
it's just a blessing.
That's super powerful, man. Because, you know, like I said, when it's authentic, it's even more rewarding, right? Like, it was out of a sincere passion, a sincere pursuit. But your commitment to excellence, I'm like, I watched, you know, like, I remember the first time I saw you at SNY, I'm like, dog is suited, booted, and locked in. Like, I do this. So, what, you know, I would say, when you think about, you know, what your ultimate vision is for Knicks Fan TV and what you look to offer the community, what's in that, you know, what's in that, you know, that bucket as you continue to build, because it's sustainable. It's you can see the life within the community.
Yeah.
But as you continue to build out this platform for yourself and the community, how do you see that evolving?
Yeah. So as we've evolved over 6 years, we've established communities across all platforms. So whether it's the social media platforms, on Instagram, there's a conversation hovering around our channel, on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, right? Whether it's the post-game chat, call us as calling in. We have a vibrant Discord channel So on every social media platform, there's a conversation going on that we spurred. And then last year, we started doing watch parties. So now we're bringing people together physically.
Nice.
Last year, we did it at the 40-40 Club, which was a dream come true for me.
Yeah.
Rocking for the playoffs. Sold out.
Insane.
But again, it's that bringing people together.
Yeah.
I mean, we have people in there, young, old. I tell people, bring your kids. Bring your kids. It's a safe environment. We have the DJ rocking, good food, good music. And we all vibing around a common cause, which is the Knicks. And so that's really the framework of what I'm doing. Yes, we talk about the team and it's around sports, but it's really, I like to bring people together.
Sure.
I'm always, that's always what I've loved to do even before I started this. Like,
yeah.
I know you into something. If I know he's into something and it connects, yo, call my guy. Call him, see what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, never know what could happen.
Mm.
And so those bonds that we're trying to build.
Yeah.
And I just see that Knicks Fan TV as a template for other teams
sure.
to establish the same thing. And so that's the ultimate goal right now.
Man, it's just beautiful, like I said. And I barely get a chance to consume at the rate that I want to. I'm over here running after, you know, kids and business channels and all kind of crazy stuff. But I'm like, nah, it's so much to learn from it, because we talk about the fans are the ones that make the sport. And I'm an athlete, so I know the only reason I feel whole is mostly because of fans. Like, you know, I love my New York Giants, mm-hmm. but I have a working relationship with New York mm-hmm. Giants, and it doesn't always work out in my favor. So you don't always feel as appreciated. But the athletes from the fan side is really where, if you can make that connection, it's just a special community when people feel valued and appreciated as a part of what makes these sports so amazing.
Yeah.
So what you tapped into is just really definitely something special, and being able to reap the rewards of it from your expertise has been really powerful to watch. Now, I don't want to assume anything, but, you know, when you think about, you know, some of your trajectory, and I love these sober-minded, grounded pivots, right? It's kind of like when you're pursuing a passion, it almost becomes like, what are we doing here? But, of course, there's the reality of this is consuming the business side, the numbers, the strategic component. You know, so I don't want to assume what your moment has been, but I always like to ask this question: in light of these many pivots, the growth, you know, the growth mindset and evolution of your brand, what's your defining moment? Like, you know, you got personal life, you got, you know, your family is coming to fruition.
Yeah.
What did you say has been your defining moment, and why?
Good question.
You hitting it from, you know, you're hitting from different channels are opening up in mainstream media. It's one thing to, you know, I tell people this is, you know, before you answer the question, I'm like, well, if you want to partner with the NFL, you need to have done something already.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, and so you start to see these different creators and people. And that's what has basically happened for Knicks Fan TV. You've mm-hmm. created a product so valuable where now the mainstream media and other particular parties and channels said, no, we need to get this guy in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and I can't make that your defining moment, because life is holistic mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, what your success in the marketplace in these different sectors are just an example, in my personal opinion, of who you are. So what would you say for you again?
I would say it was when I appeared on the Max Kellerman Show.
Nice.
I would say it was that, because in the beginning, it started off as one segment. And it was kind of like the Knicks fan versus the anti-fan. And you know, me representing the entire Knicks fan base and him, you know, the villain role that he played on First Take was like, yo, everything he could to be anti-Dick.
And, no doubt.
And so it was a 12-round battle that first episode. But then they extended it. Then they extended an invitation to come on the next week.
Nice.
Came on the next week. Same confrontation. But as the weeks went by, if the conversation flowed more in the general NBA conversation.
Nice.
And then he started, you know, really taking a liking to me, really trying to school me to the game, teach me what was going on behind the scenes, what I needed to do, what I need to freshen up on. I think that was a defining moment, because it was, you know, the respect from an industry OG.
OG.
But someone, because Max Kellerman came up from public access television, someone that understood the path that I was trying to build.
And it's dope.
I would say that was certainly the moment, because from there, then the SNY opportunities came about, and then ultimately WFAN NBA radio as well.
No, that's special. Yeah, I'm one of these dudes, and Max is one of those early people to kind of give me an extra love lump from a helmet catch perspective as a New York sports guy. But my first time I ever saw Max was in a boxing space. So just an interesting tidbit. I never knew he was a public access guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a big fan of people who get it the right way. Catch the Moment is this platform of what's the journey, right? Yes. When people see you at a place of pinnacle success, you know, oftentimes we miss the recipe that formulates that iconic moment. And you know, like I said, it's easy to see that the best is yet to come for Knicks Fan TV, but you've cultivated that. So what would you suggest for, you know, people who are kind of like trudging through the mud, what would be like that three-piece recipe in relation to whether it's establishing brand, you know, finding your lane, your sector, to, you know, to navigate some of those pain points, that process that brings you to your moment?
Mm-hmm. I would say for one, you know, I interviewed Mike Breen, Knicks play-by-play, NBA Hall of Fame announcer. And one of the pieces of advice he gave me was you need reps, right? You need reps. Yep. You got to keep going every single day.
It's good.
And you may not have the right formula. It's just like your first question when it was like, what platform is ideal? You won't know until you try it out. You got to test something out here, spread it here, and see what the reaction, what the engagement is. So you need those reps.
Yep.
And that can be almost like the equalizer for a lot of people.
Sure.
I tell people all the time, it's like, if you're not consistent, you're going to bail on this thing the moment you see, like, you're not getting that many views. You're not getting a penny from you for your thoughts.
That's it.
It's a lonely world out there. But it can grow into something if you keep it consistent and learn from that. And then secondly, I would say always be learning. Mm. That was one of the things with me, like, during the journey and even now.
Yeah.
I'm focused. I'm reading something. I'm watching something. I'm listening to something to get a leg up. What do I need to learn to do? Right? Behind the scenes, we were talking about the cameras.
Big facts.
I had to learn that. Based on an emergency, I had to figure it out.
Sure.
And so I'm always curious. I'm always trying to learn and always trying to improve by at least 10% each day.
Nice.
And that doesn't even have to be in the craft. It could be physically, emotionally, mentally, whatever it is.
Sure.
Just trying to enrich your spirit for at least 10% each day. And then, you know, I tell people all the time to try to pull out the qualities or some of the themes from previous walks of life, right? Because we're always going to pivot.
Sure. But
there's things that you can take with you, even when it's not aligned.
Yeah.
And continue on your path. Like, for example, like me being in a sales and marketing role.
Yep.
I'm always selling, right? Even when I'm in the camera, I talk Knicks.
I'm selling myself.
I'm selling the content. I'm selling the watch party. I'm selling, you know, this and third. So those things help me.
That's great. Right?
If I'm on SNY and I'm you know, prepared to put my best foot forward in front of the camera.
Sure.
Those are like me going to the board meetings back in the day. Or nice. Because you know you got to come with it at 10 times harder than the next guy. Get that respect and the credibility. So that's always my thinking. I always got to be prepared. Got to be on point. Got to look sharp and put my best foot forward. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. Listen, I think you said a whole lot there, man. Always taking those transferable skill sets and bringing them everywhere you go. Never losing something. That's something, like I said, I never planned to be a full-time entrepreneur in the middle of the pandemic, right? So it's kind of like the native space of being a grinder, understanding your value. What would you say as an entrepreneur, as a person who created the lane for himself, what was the, you know, when we talk about complementary skills or partners, right? What was the thing that he was like, man, I'm not good at this. How do I bring that into my ecosystem so that we can keep a high quality product? What did it come through a person? Did you have to learn the skills yourself? What was the area? You know, you got sales, operations, marketing, and finance, right? Mm-hmm. What was, you know, everybody's typically not a master at all
right,
four.
Right.
What was that thing that you had to supplement, and how did you best get to it so that you could sustain the quality of your product?
Yeah, I would say three things. Certainly our graphics.
Sure.
Our graphic overlays. And I would say every aspect of what I do, I've learned or I've tried at some point. Nice. They look like chicken scratch, but I got to try it. I got to know the process. I got to figure out how do we make it more efficient? How do we streamline it?
Excellent.
And so when you're getting it out the mud in the beginning, I had experience in all those things. I would make my own graphics. I would put my own thumbnails together. I would put my own Instagram things together.
Whew.
But ultimately you say, okay, I got to take that time away, focus on this, and I got to give this to someone else. But the beauty of community building, when fans see an authentic person in front of them, they want to support it. The beauty of that over the years was that people reach out to me all the time.
Nice.
Like, yo, I'm a photographer. Can I come to this event and help you out? I'm a videographer. Can I help you out here? I'm a graphics guy. Check this out.
Fire.
And that's how it happened.
Man, that's beautiful.
My graphics guy now, shout out to Gamba, sent me a DM on Instagram, like a full template of a clip from a show. Check this whole thing out. And over time, we just kept working together.
Kept working together.
And said, I got to bring him on board. So
natural, organic relationships.
Yeah. Definitely. I would say definitely graphics and the video production.
Like, sure.
Like we talked about behind the scenes, just having someone who knows, okay, this is the lights we need. These are the cameras.
Yeah.
These are the microphones. This is how we need to run the internet connection, you know, especially when we're out on the road. I needed that skill set to take me away from that planning. So
bro,
I was blessed in that regard.
No, it's great, man. It's because, like I said, it doesn't happen by accident. And you eventually, you know, to keep quality. And, you know, like I said, there is this process. And I think people shirk the process, right? And most of us get imposter, you know, like somewhere along the way, you get, you know, imposter syndrome starts setting in. Mm-hmm. And you just got to crush those ideas and those voices that aren't leading to the end. But man, tell me just about what you're most excited about, obviously, on two ends for Knicks Fan TV. And, the Knicks, I don't know if there's been as much anticipation. I feel like, you know, last year was, there was some good solid anticipation, but talk about the current state of the New York Knicks a little bit. Give me a little bit of sauce. I'm watching, but I'm not as entrenched as I want to be. But it's for Knicks Fan TV as well as, you know, kind of what we're seeing so far in the season.
Sure. So for the team, I mean, they basically ran most of the team back with the addition of Dante DiVincenzo. So you have the same team that, you know, fell two games short of the Eastern Conference Finals. Right now, at the point of this recording, they're about 500 at the 500 mark.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a tough schedule out the gate. So especially during the season, as you know, as a former athlete, it takes a while to get into a rhythm.
It does. It
takes a while to build your chemistry up. I think that's what we're seeing with the team. But so far at the early stretch, you're seeing some promising performances. I mean, R.J. Barrett has been really dynamic.
Finally, man.
He's starting to take off.
I was about to ask you. I'm like, man, give me some more. I mean, because we talked about drafting R.J. out next to Zion, right? Like, it's kind of like, so it looks like the lion is awakening. It looks like there's a deeper sense of confidence and urgency. And some of the, you know, snippets that I've seen watching him play.
Sure. And so he certainly looks good. Mitchell Robinson is looking good. Jalen Brunson seems to be getting up to speed. Julius Randle is catching up. And so they certainly have their flaws.
Yeah.
You know, how they work out the backup power forward situation is going to be left to be seen throughout the regular season.
Yeah.
We have to hope that they stay healthy because R.J. Barrett, he's already missed a number of games, one for a knee injury and then just recently with a migraine, which –
It's a different generation.
It's a different generation.
Hey,
different
listen, I got so much respect for all these professional athletes.
Yeah.
But when I'm telling you, dude, you know, all these kids, I'm raising kids, I'm like, man, these jokers are just different.
Different.
You know, and they can be amazing, but I'm telling you, they brittle out the gate.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, we need to let them fall a little bit more.
For sure.
And we need to let them formulate the grit that's going to take. To be a champion, it's a mindset, right?
Mindset.
You're talking about New York City and what we expect from our champions, but I get it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, for the channel, we're just going to continue to grow it.
Like,
as I said, we have our watch parties, which is mostly every weekend out in various places in the city, various sports bars and lounges in the city. So we have our watch parties that we're building. For me personally, you know, at WFAN, I'm hosting on WFAN now. I'll be back on SNY TV, and so those platforms give me an opportunity to continue to build the brand, promote the brand, promote myself, and keep learning.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a journey, man, and I'm just very humbled and blessed to be on it and really enjoying it.
Bro, you're killing the game. The insight that you provided, even in relation to how to approach this, is really just, it's life applicable, right? I mean, like, it's not separate. When we talk about some of the transferable lessons from, it's the grabbing on, being a habitual learner, having a growth mindset, being committed to it. Don't feel like you have to have everything perfected and figured out. Be committed to learning the process. Because it's kind of like even when I work with athletes, and when it comes to, you know, the big narrative with athletes, of course, around financial education. Obviously, we're starting to see the modern day athlete entrepreneur at a higher level. But, you know, within my era, we didn't have the experience, right? So how do you have to be able to learn enough about something to ask the right questions to be able to determine who's fit to help you, right? And I think that's everybody, right? Like, that's everybody. So salute to the formative process of, you know, CP Franchise, the parents, the legacy. Because, brother, you built to last. You got the New York state of mind,
appreciate
man.
Appreciate
so any salutations, you know, give us a quick shout where we can find you, where we can find Knicks Fan TV, and set us out, bro.
Appreciate it, man. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for the opportunity, because this is just an honor to be on your show, man. So
you earned it.
Definitely appreciate it.
Earned it, man.
Appreciate it. So, but for you guys at home, you can find us on youtube.com/KnicksFanTV. Also, youtube.com/TheNBAReport. That's a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday show at 3 p.m. Eastern Time live stream covering the NBA at large. And then on Instagram and Twitter, you have @KnicksFanTV, @TeamNBAReport, and @CPTheFanchise. So we are everywhere. You can check us out. And once again, thanks again for the opportunity, man.
Bro, dudes everywhere, Knicks Fan TV is buzzing. It's buzzing. You never know who's going to be in the comments getting crazy, talking crazy about our beloved Knicks. But, you know, when you talk about a team, we do. I'm going to see a champ. We're going to see a championship in our lifetime.
In the lifetime.
We're going to see it. Listen, and I know, like I said, I got so much love for my Knicks. I don't bash. I have to restrain from bashing our owner. I mean, the dude's a maven in the marketplace. But I'm like, you know, it was hard when he put out Oak, dog. I mean, like, I'm trying to let you go, but that was one of the hardest moments in my life right now when they put Oak out. I'm like, yo, the disrespect is at an all-time high. but I'm excited about, you know, where the state of the franchise is, and can appreciate you more for creating that community so that we can labor together, so we can bring the success to birth in the New York Knickerbocker. So listen, appreciate y'all for checking in with Catch the Moment Podcast. Hope y'all enjoyed every bit of flavor that this episode, the game, the pain, the process, the journey that's going to get you to your next moment. Make sure you check us in, like, comment, share. We're going to get great done together. We'll see you next week.